Technorama episode 593, Diagonally Parked in a Parallel Universe. I really wanted to say Diagon Alley, but not this time.
I came up with that one on my own. How about that?
I like it. And for a minute there, I thought you had some website where you're going, hey, clever titles. But no, Craig comes up with the titles all on his own. And
yep, I did that. Yep.
You can tell.
Come on.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. We appreciate it. And if you're returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I know some of you are returning. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me right across that virtual table to prove that we are separated by half a continent or more is That's Craig right. Stebb. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good, as well as to be expected in the COVID-19 era.
For you and me, we've been working from home for quite a while, so the lifestyle change is not that significant.
No, just being a little more aware of, you know, being around other people outside of the house. You know, there's a couple of times I thought, well, I had to go to the grocery store.
We all have to go to the grocery store from time to time, yes.
Yeah, so I went to the grocery store, and of course, things are different. The ladies actually sanitizing the buggies out there for everybody.
And the touch screens on the self-checkout. Yeah, I noticed a lot more of that, too.
Yeah, I didn't want to touch the screen too much, but things like that. There was no eggs and meat. Meat's kind of thin. Stuff like that. It's not scary, but just kind of
we got
odd.
Eggs and milk. We couldn't get any toilet paper. One box of Kleenex per visit per customer. What was the other thing we were after? Pasta's gone. There's a Mexican grocery store just down the street, a Carne Sierra. It says rice, beans, eggs in big letters. It's like they're advertising what they want people to come in. It's
wow.
Like, hey, rice. We could do with some of that.
Yeah, it's funny. People went for actually. It's funny the things that I saw that were also thinned out was the stuff. It's kind of telling about Americans' diets, because the things that are missing are the ones that they probably shouldn't have been eating anyway.
Doritos,
the Doritos cereal looks kind of thin. I don't know. There's lots of processed stuff.
I noticed that too. We were seeing pictures on Facebook of counters that are cleared out, but there's still like cartons of oatmeal. Like, you know?
I know. Yeah. I saw people complaining about bread, and I'm thinking, just buy, there's a 5-pound thing of flour right
go
there.
Go make your own. Making bread is not that hard.
It is not that hard.
Flour's gone too? Oh, yeah. People are buying up flour out here then.
Oh, I didn't even look, to be honest with you, but yeah.
Fortunately, we have a couple of pounds in the container. We got a 5-pound bag sitting on the side, so we're good for a while. Might be making small batches here pretty soon if we can't get bread. I'm sure the supply will catch up with the demand in a little bit. So be patient, everybody. Don't go crazy, and be kind to your fellow neighbor. Save some toilet paper for them.
No kidding. Yes.
It's not going to be the currency of 2020. Yeah. Oh, we lost Craig.
No, I'm right here. I had to close the door.
Okay. In case a cat comes in.
I'm hoping after at least a few weeks that the whole grocery store thing will kind of smooth out a little bit.
I hope so too. Yeah. In the meantime, ours has gone from 24 hours to actually some fixed hours. What is it, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.?
I think so they all have.
They've got 10-hour downtime now.
I do like, I will say this, I do like the idea, and some of them are doing this, where they open up an hour early for seniors.
Yes, and I believe pregnant people are in there as well. One of our coworkers said the same thing. So good on them for adapting to the situation. Speaking of adapting, we asked our question last week. Let's get our feedback music going. Hey, Victor.
Letters. Oh, we
get
letters.
Oh, hey, Victor.
Hey, Scott. Message for you, sir.
Joe Fiore.
Those letters. our shout out to the chat room while we're doing our other segments.
Hey, Facebook. Oh, wait, he's just in there anyway. Hey, I think we should limit our hours on this podcast. How about that?
Yeah, Sunday night, 9:30 Eastern.
We'll let elders and pregnant ladies in first in the stream.
It's like I'm boarding an airplane. Do we have any military out there?
Yeah. Yes, right.
All right, we asked you last week, what are your favorite mobile games? And boy, howdy, we got a lot of responses. I'm going to pull the ones out of the Technorama podcast page first. Alexis Duran says, Fate Grand Order and Pokemon Go. John says, Jules 2, been playing the same round for 2 years. Haven't lost yet.
Or won. He hasn't won either.
Good on you. I'm not going to read all of the ones that came back in my personal list.
Yeah.
But we got Jack Mangan with mobile phone games or portable cardboard games. Good point. And then he responded back, his wife says, Jack Mangan, my thoughts exactly. Any game is portable if you try hard enough, says Clinton. I think tetherball is a particular challenge.
I'm killed my back carrying that Pac-Man machine around for ages, but.
Jack says, Clinton over, pocket tetherball. That's $1 million idea.
Pocket?
Hey.
No.
You could be like Napoleon Dynamite and just playing it by yourself in this day.
Oh, so boring. Oh, yeah.
Nikki says, Mario Kart Tour is actually a lot of fun. Lucas, her boyfriend, says, playing a ton of mobile games. Clash of Clans and Clash Royale. Call of Duty on here from Nate Welch. Solitaire from my sister. Good old classic Solitaire. You can play that electronically or the IRL version, too.
That's true. You know, by the way, speaking of mobile games.
Yes.
Just interject here. I went on the hunt for a couple of games. Thought it'd be nice to have something you could play offline. To be honest with you, it's kind of hard to find offline games.
Sudoku, crossword puzles, like
yeah, Sudoku,
Lone
something
Guy's
like that.
Night Says.
Maybe some card games, but you know, some of the other games, you go, oh, this is great, and I have to have internet. You know, like say you're on a flight or something.
Oh, you're talking about electronic games to play?
Like on your phone.
Yeah,
like
offline electronic games.
Correct. Offline. I'm just saying that a lot of them require internet so they can log in and try and upsell you on something.
That does seem a little wacky. When you think of things like the Jewel games where you've got the tile sliding up and down, that could be an offline game easy enough.
Yes. And I would be happy to throw
a buck. Do you have something like that you can play offline? Yeah. Donna's saying, yeah, there are some that are out there.
Oh, yeah. There's a few. It's just they're not easy to find.
Todd, poor Todd, he's got the oven mitt already. Oh, he's outside the studio door telling us, I got the oven mitt.
He's probably running around with it stuck on his head.
I can't see.
Yeah.
No. What did you get on your responses, Craig?
I only got a couple. Scott Tyler, Facebook.
Facebook is an online game?
Yeah. Kathy Esposito says Words with Friends and Boggle. I played Words for Friends before. It was kind of fun.
Donna plays that all the time. What do you got? Like three games with your mom and Mad Marv and 10 games she's got going right now.
I think she's been playing with
10 with her mom. Just her mom. And you've got like Scrabble. Three Scrabble games going left and right. So yeah, she's all over that.
Let's see. My buddy Brian Davis said Word Stacks. And my old friend CJ Lamb says, sadly, Candy Crush. And he hangs his head in shame.
My oldest sister said Candy Crush Saga as well. Hey, nothing wrong with that. What about you, Craig? Do you play any mobile games?
I play Words with Friends. Angry Birds for a long time. Just something to kill time, you know, waiting somewhere.
Yeah.
I've got Star Trek Timelines on there. I play that a little bit. I think Clinton Alvord, our buddy, Clinton, he plays that. That's about me. How about you?
I am not playing any. I have not played any mobile games for a few years. I was playing Magic Piano for quite a while. I think 2011 to about 2016. Which was a lot of fun. Oh. But then they changed it up. I'd earned all these points and got all these downloads and they changed the whole monetization system and suddenly my collection was gone and I went, nah, it's not fun anymore.
You beat it.
Well, I didn't beat it, but I had a whole bunch of songs in my repertoire that I like to play. And when they're not there, like, I got to pay to get them back? No, thanks. So yeah. It just, the way they changed the payment structure and winning and earning points, just, it kind of turned me off. So a lot of fun, but no, I'm done.
I did go, and if anybody has a good suggestion, I was thinking of trying to find a good RPG offline game just so I could just pull it up. I mean, you know, work on some stats a little bit and come back later, you know, kind of thing. Nothing crazy, just something to play.
Yeah.
And I don't want to require, you know, paying money to upgrade my shields or whatever. You know, I just wanted something to play. So anyway, to call out. Anybody's got any suggestions? There you go.
Yep. We're looking. I was just checking to see if there was anything in the chat room about any additional games, but I do not see anything. So let's go on with, well, first we've got to play the outro music. Thank you very much.
All right.
We'll have another question for you at the end of the show.
All right. Good night, everybody. Oh, wait, that's too early.
Is it? Is it really? There we go. History time. It's on this day in history for March 25th, 2020. This is the 85th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. Feels like about the 257th day of this stay-at-home deal. But no.
Yeah.
There are 281 days remaining in 2020. It was on this date in 1584 that Sir Walter Raleigh was granted, get this, granted a patent to colonize Virginia.
A patent?
Yeah.
Has he got a method? That's a bit of a special method to go with.
Does
that.
Everybody who live there have to pay a patent license?
Oh, maybe. 365 years ago today, Saturn's largest moon, Titan, was discovered by Christian Huygens.
Huygens. Name of the Huygens. Probe that they sent down.
Oh, yeah.
Down.
Huygens.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. No. It was 213 years ago today that the Slave Trade Act becomes law, abolishing the slave trade in the British Empire. Good on them.
And March 25th, 1948, the first successful tornado forecast predicted that, wait for it, a tornado will strike Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma.
Here's a tornado warning. Stay away from tornadoes.
I don't see the whether it did or not. So
were they successful? It was just a prediction. It's like, oh, yeah, we're predicting the end of the world on April 16th, 2085.
Yeah.
March 25th, 1948, the first success. Oh, you already read that one. United States Customs seized copies of Allen Ginsberg's poem Howl on obscenity grounds. It was on this date in 1957.
It was also on this date in 1965. The civil rights activist led by Martin Luther King Jr. successfully completed their 4-day, 50-mile march from Selma to the capital of Montgomery, Alabama.
I have a dream, and now I have sore feet.
No kidding.
No, they completed that the day before I was born. Amazing what you can figure out what happened before you were born. Also on this date in 1969, during their honeymoon, John Lennon and Yoko Ono hold their first bed-in. It's like a sit-in or a love-in. Well, they had a bed-in where everybody just stayed in bed, which would probably work out really well today. They did that for peace at the Amsterdam Hilton Hotel, and they stayed there until March 31st.
How about that? Also, March 25th, 1979, the first fully successful space shuttle orbiter, Columbia, was delivered to John F. Kennedy Space Center to be prepared for its first launch.
Yep. And WikiWikiWeb, the world's first wiki. And part of the Portland Pattern Repository. Well, there's a tongue twister. It was made public by Ward Cunningham on this date in 1995.
Seems like it hadn't been that far, that long ago, but yet it is.
25 years ago.
Yeah, I know. Ugh. Oh, wait. Happy birthday goes out to...
Go ahead.
I was waiting for you to do it. Happy birthday goes out on this date to German mathematician and astronomer Christoph Clavius, born on this date in 1538.
John Barry, the American naval officer and father of the American Navy, was born 275 years ago today.
And born March 25th, 1800, German geologist and academic Ernst Heinrich Karl von Dyken.
Pretty close. Yeah. American sculptor, the guy who designed Mount Rushmore, Gutzon Borglum, was born 153 years ago today.
And born also on this same date in 1928, American Capitol pilot, or captain, I saw pilot and captain together. American captain, pilot, and astronaut, Jim Lovell. That Jim Lovell.
American businessman who founded Domino's Pizza. No, his name does not include Domino.
His last name's not pizza either.
Tom Monahan is 83 today.
And D.C. Fontana, the American... That D.C. Fontana.
What is she famous for?
The American screenwriter and producer was born 81 years ago today.
What sort of things would we recognize her being a screenwriter and producer for, Craig?
Star Trek. I'm just kidding. Star Trek.
Whoa. Ooh, you know what? We almost had a Skype glitch there.
I hear it fuzzing out.
American actor and director Paul Michael Glaser is 77 today? Oh, man.
And French volcanologist Maurice Kraft was born on this date in 1946.
Nailed it. Also born on that same date in 1947, English singer-songwriter, pianist, producer, and actor Elton John, a.k.a. Reg Dwight.
That's right. And also turning 70 today is American singer-songwriter Ronnie McDowell.
That Ronnie McDowell?
Yes, that Ronnie McDowell.
Also born that same date in 1965, American actress, producer, and designer Sarah Jessica Parker.
That Sarah Jessica Parker?
That's the way it was on this day in history for March 25th, 2020. And we forgot the listener birthdays.
Oh!
I think we're going to have to do an impromptu real quick. Play the music, and I'm going to pull up another browser tab. Oh, that wasn't the end. We have time! Salvage this from the
We'll edit this out.
Oh, maybe not. Oh, here it comes. Yeah, but too late. Let's see if we can do it real fast. Nick St. Gabriel on the 25th, Chuck Tomasi on the 26th, Brenna Baird from Hampton, Virginia on the 26th, and that's the birthdays for this week. Happy birthday to all of you. That's the way it was on this day in history for March 25th, 2020. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki. We wish you all the best. If it's your birthday and you're not on the calendar, happy birthday to you. And if you get your name on the calendar, we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. A little unstructured, but still worked.
Yeah, it worked.
Let's do some news. Pretty
startling news.
You want startling news? I don't know what order these are in anymore. We'll do the crybaby.
Good news, crybabies.
Hey, I do want to say up front, I tried to find articles that was not related to the COVID-19 virus.
It's pretty hard, but there is one in here, and there's a reason for it.
It's hard because all the scientists are at home, too, so they're not making news.
So we're going to report all the fake news we can find.
Oh, we're doing that.
We can make up news as we go.
Hmm. Okay.
We're just going to change the Chuck Chat to Cliff Clavin.
That's right. All right. Oh, am I doing the first?
You're going first.
Okay. So the first article is about an algorithm that has produced every potential music melody so no one can ever sue for copyright infringement. AI for the win.
Okay.
So new music is no longer something due to a pair of attorneys who made an algorithm. A pair of attorneys. I see where this is going already. Who made an algorithm to write each and every musical tune that could possibly exist, as opposed to claiming all songs as their private property. But the duo have released their whole catalog of songs into the public domain. Wow. In the expectation that this will bring an end to copyright laws. I doubt it. That was a personal editor note for me. I doubt it. Lawyer, musician, developer Damien Ryle developed the idea after realizing that all singer-songwriters are basically walking on the melodic minefield. Yeah, because who knows? Since there are only a finite number of melodies that could exist. Therefore, with every new song that gets written, the odds of producing something genuinely unique decreases, and the chances of composing a melody is already recorded by someone else. So, anyway, in a recent TED Talk, Ryle clarify. I'm having to scroll through all the crap.
That site was nasty. It says, hey, you've got an ad blocker on here. I'm not going to show you our content. So I had to turn my ad blocker on. And then you get all their ads.
Yeah. So anyway, you can go to the article and navigate the ads, but you can find this as a TED Talk X call, TEDx talk, where Ryle clarifies what they did and everything. So go check it out. I think it's kind of neat. And in other news, I developed an algorithm to produce every type of podcast that could possibly be made. So there's no more fighting over who's the first to podcast about something.
And I've created an algorithm to register every other domain name that's not already taken.
And there goes your life savings.
Yeah, but think how rich I'll be when somebody wants like dead dog done dead dog.
Yeah. Dogdaysofpodcasting2.com.
Speaking of dog days, you started up another Dog Days, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did. You know, I thought that everybody was kind of stuck at home, especially the next few weeks.
And they'd have all this extra time on their hands.
All this extra time, got nothing else to do. I thought, what the heck? I would bring back the Dog Days of Podcasting.
But so explain what the Dog Days of Podcasting is for the people who have not heard of it before.
All right. So if you don't know, Dog Days of Podcasting usually happens around the month of August.
Yes.
And we podcast once a day, every day for 30 days. So the challenge is to keep producing these podcasts for all the 30 days. So flash forward to today where everybody's kind of stuck in their homes. I thought it might be fun to kind of build on that and build our community that shows up around all these shows while we're stuck in the house. So somebody can record and you can listen to all these podcasts as people are creating them. You can go to dogdaysofpodcasting.com and find the links to subscribe to it if you want. But what's fun is I joke about it. It was a joke and now it's true. You get so many podcasters producing podcasts. The challenge isn't so much making the podcast as it is now listening to them all. But a community kind of springs up out of that. People start talking to one another. We have a Facebook group and it gets kind of fun and lively in there. So feel free to jump in on any of that. If I don't have the Facebook group link on the website, I'm going to do that right after our show.
All right. So
check it out. Dog Days of Podcast.
You've also done Dog Days of Advent as well.
Yeah, we do Advent. Now, oh, by the way, this is called Dog Days of Quarantine. So. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
well, at least you didn't call it Dog Days of Coronavirus or something. That just doesn't roll off the tongue.
No. All Dog
right. Days. On with our next story. Everything you need to do to play D&D from the comfort of your home. Isn't that where many of us played anyway? Well, let's read on. An overwhelming majority of people are practicing responsible social distancing, using the air quotes, and lots of places have issued orders minimizing the size of gatherings. Well, it's unlikely your D&D group has more than 10 people. It's a good idea to keep your distance anyway. Thankfully, we live in 2020, so there's great ways to keep your D&D campaign running or even start a new one, all from the comfort of your couch or computer desk. Most importantly, you still need other people to join your digital campaign, but we're assuming you got that part covered. Honestly, if you've already got your own rule books or want to play for free with the basic rule set, you just need a chat service like Google Hangouts or Discord and some dice. That said, for a close to full experience as you can get, you'll want the virtual tabletop, and for that, well, they recommend Roll20. And I think, Scott's in the chat. I think he was using Fantasy Grounds, or is that the stuff you keep track of your character sheets? No, I can't remember.
I don't remember, but I do know, I wish I'd kept this article, but there was an article saying like some of the websites like Roll20 and stuff like that were doing some free offerings because of everybody's having to stay at home.
We used them for a while, a few years ago, but I think there were a couple of quirks in there that we went somewhere else. Don't know if they've been addressed or not. Haven't checked back. But you might think Roll20 is just an online Dungeons & Dragons solution, which it is, but it also supports dozens of other games like Pathfinder, Starfinder, Cyberpunk, even older versions of D&D like 3.5 and AD&D. So if you're a gamer, you know what those things mean. I'm not going to explain them. A lot of great stuff in there if you haven't done this before. It is a lot of fun. And, your GM can build out the world and do special effects like lighting when you get into the dungeon. It's a lot of fun. Did that for a while. No answer.
So if you're not eating up enough bandwidth in your neighborhood,
right.
Do some video conferencing and play games with everybody else.
Speaking of bandwidth, I did hear a news story that Netflix and YouTube will temporarily suspend HD because you've got people doing work from home. You've got kids doing school from home. Mm-hmm. And HD takes up 3 times the bandwidth of standard def. Now, it's not going to look that great on your big 75, 85 inch TV, but you think about the consequences of still being able to get your job done. I will mm-hmm. take the video conference for work instead of cursing at my neighbors going, stop watching Netflix during the day.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's completely reasonable, especially
responsible.
Yeah. I think it's totally fine. And thinking that I know not everybody is just streaming to their TVs. A lot of people stream to devices like phones and iPads and whatnot. So what's the big deal if the quality drops down a little bit? You're probably not going to see it on an iPad or a phone.
I really wanted to have like an 8-bit version of Star Wars or something on the screen for that story. So this pixelated version is like, is that Luke, I think?
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, story.
So speaking, I know I tried to find articles that wasn't necessarily related to the virus, but
this has got a nerd factor to it.
I thought it had a nerd factor to it, and I thought it was interesting. So this AI camera can detect people who have COVID-19 and immediately have them removed from the population.
Apparently, they don't only have COVID-19, but they've got purple teeth.
Yeah, he looks a little. Anyway, so the U.S., with the U.S. lagging in other countries in the distribution of coronavirus testing kits, health authorities have had to look at other means of detection, like the infrared ear thermometers used in some countries. And now one Austin-based company says its security cameras use thermal imaging and computer vision tech to detect people who have fever possibly related to the virus. Unlike thermometers, which work with one person at a time and at close range, Athena Security's security cameras can detect some camera detection system may be far better at scanning larger numbers of people in places like airports, grocery stores, hospitals, voting locations, and wherever you may be.
Just walk around with like FLIR goggles like the firemen do so you can tell where the hot spots are.
Yeah. Some VR glasses. I see somebody. Anyway, so the computer's thermal cameras are already in use at co-working spaces in Austin and will be deployed in some large Fortune 500 companies and some airports in coming weeks. But Athena says it can't divulge the names of those customers just yet, which I get it that.
Yeah.
So the camera's going to detect the heat of 12. This is what's amazing. The cameras can detect the heat of 12 different places on the body with an accuracy of within a half a degree. That's pretty amazing.
It's good enough.
Yeah. The company software, which works at high grade off the shelf cameras, uses AI model to zoom in on the subject's inner eye, which is the most reflective of the body's actual temperature, she said. She's being Lisa Falzone, the CEO of Athena.
Cool.
There's a video of it demonstrating it. I think it's kind of neat. I wouldn't say that this would be. What are you going to do? Escort them out the building? What's the procedure once you identify somebody?
Well, you take them aside and you go, hey, we should probably get you tested. If you're running a fever, why are you at work infecting other people?
Yeah. Well, I guess so. Yeah, but I think it's really cool though. I mean, that is an interesting way. Half a degree. That to me, that was amazing.
That is pretty amazing. And like I said, good enough. You know the difference between 98.6 and 102.5. That's good enough.
Yeah. Well, true.
I'm looking for something that I was looking for earlier when I typed this. Yes, we have an article on Hayabusa 2 spacecraft. And if you just I was looking for images on this article before, and I typed in Hayabusa without the 2, you get a whole bunch of motorcycle images.
Right.
Didn't know that. I'm not a motorcycle enthusiast. So Hayabusa 2 spacecraft blasted a bus-sized crater into an asteroid. Woohoo! Humanity has made a large mark on another world courtesy of the Japanese spacecraft Hayabusa 2. The fascinating Hayabusa mission arrived at the asteroid Ryugu on June of 2018. We've covered that story, and you probably heard it on other astronomical podcasts as well. It sent tiny rovers down to explore the space rock, and the following February, it violently chest-bumped to grab samples to return to Earth before shooting it with a copper cannonball last April. On Thursday, a newspaper published in the journal Science detailed the crater that was created by Hayabusa Space Sucker Punch. Take that, asteroid. Hayabusa went on in for a closer look before leaving the asteroid last year and found the impact from the cannonball, which was about the size of a tennis ball, the cannonball was, not the crater, created a semicircular crater about 10 meters, which is about 33 feet wide, or roughly the width of a bus. Wow. Fire a tennis ball at an asteroid and kaboomy.
Wow.
Because that's what you do for fun when you have asteroids and spacecraft. So let us take a quick break. We are 30 minutes into this and appreciate you sticking around. Yes.
By the way, if you go look in the Twitter feed, they show it actually happening. There's a little video in the Twitter Twitter post. You can see it go, boom, you know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's super, you know, it's really cool to see. Imagine that this is on, you know, another world or.
I wonder if that much impact changed the trajectory of the asteroid and now it's going to run into Earth in the future.
Yeah, it started slightly, just half a degree.
It nudged it. So the orbit has now changed. And
hey, you thought the COVID-19 was your worst nightmare. Guess what?
Not yet. It's not.
Nope.
Okay. Let us take a quick break. We will be right back with some more stories.
Hang on. All right.
Greetings, programs. This is Jay Mayer, the Tron Guy, and you're listening to Chuck and Craig.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with Astronomy Cast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host, Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
We need longer breaks.
I know. Hey, I was getting a little warm in here. I had a hoodie on. It's like, okay, we're taking a break.
Quick. Or we need longer. Yeah, we need longer breaks. We'll put in some longer audio clips.
All right.
There we'll go. Just make the whole podcast break. Oh, wait. No, we already broke this podcast. Hey, want to give a quick shout out to the chat room. We do the show on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern when we can, and lately we seem to be able to can because we don't have a whole lot of business travel interfering with our podcast schedule, but we do occasionally have something going on with the family. And
so
whatnot.
You, the listener, win.
You really, in what sense?
You get more of Chuck and myself.
Let's go mining through the mystery that is Facebook and see what we come up with. We've got Joe Fiore, Victor Cahiao, Mark Kilfoyle, David Wall, Danny Mortensen from Mork has shown up. Clinton Elvard, Andy Bolido has shown up. Tom Hausman, thank you. Any names that I did not call out, Craig?
You didn't call me out?
I'll call you out.
Yeah, I see. Mark Kilfoyle, Clinton. Yeah, I mean, I really wish this Facebook thing would give us a better list.
I do too. But until then, we're just going to have to suffer on. And thank you for joining us on Sunday nights when we do this show. Subscribe to the Technorama podcast page. You'll get a notification when we go live. Or if you're following one of us, you'll get a notification of that also. So we know everybody's Sunday nights are now crammed with all kinds of goodness and activity that they didn't get done during the week. So we want to be part of that. Or you can listen to this podcast on Wednesdays when it's released in audio form and YouTube and all that good stuff. So thank you. Thank you very much. And a huge thank you. Let's play that music. Yes. Thank you to our patrons. They are the people that keep this going as we continue to work through our hosting migration from our old provider to our new provider. Our bills are just a slightly higher, but you are doing an awesome job at covering the cost of this. The show is, in fact, brought to you by you, the likes of Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Night Gig Studio, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Leon, John Noble, Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Yorga Sharawan, you guys are awesome, Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, can't tell you how much we appreciate your help, Denise Inglis, Stephen Wetchie, Dean Jensen, Dandy Mancoyer, NCAF1, Christina, and Brian Brown.
That Brian Brown.
For as little as a dollar a show, they get the content, they get extra content, they get their name called out. If you are listening to this, I have not yet sent out the postcards from our cruise because I've been self-quarantined since the cruise. But that being said, make sure you get us your physical postal address on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. Make sure that you got your postal address there so that we can put it on the postcard and get that out to you as soon as I'm out of the doghouse. And we will get those sent off. Thank you. Thank you very much. And how do you do that? You go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast. And if you want to get a postcard next year, we're already registered for the next cruise. Hopefully we'll have a next cruise.
Yeah, hopefully.
And
we may be all enjoying it in hazmat suits.
Well, yes, we could all cosplay like Kirk when he was in the Tholian web or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Let me out. In that beekeeper's outfit.
The beekeeper.
That's what I call it. That was his beekeeper's outfit.
That's what it was. That's what it looked like.
Yep. Or, no, there was the other one in the Naked Time where they had the suits on, but just don't take your glove off and touch anything or you'll go crazy and drunk and wind up sleeping with Tasha Yar. No.
Whoa, sorry. What?
Let's get on with it.
What's the downside here?
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos? And
your turn.
Over here.
All right.
In the media corner.
Are you stuck at home? Why? Yes, I believe you are. Well, you can look to the skies. And I thought about you, Chuck, when I picked up this article.
Yes.
But this is something because you enjoy looking through your telescope and you know a good bit about the stars.
I
and,
do.
Observing.
And if you missed it, keep your eye on the various astronomy apps because they give you notifications of when cool things are coming up. This past week, I think it was Tuesday through Friday. Tuesday would have been St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. Through Friday, if you got up before sunrise and looked to the east, you could see Mercury, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars and Jupiter were really, really close together, and the moon. So it was really spectacular to see. The only thing missing was Venus, but that's in the evening right now. Yeah. But when I looked up there and I went, wow, Mars and Jupiter are aligned, and the moon is the moon in the seventh house? Started singing those songs. When the moon is in the seventh house. And Mars and Jupiter were aligned, and Mercury was right in the crotch of Aquarius, but that wasn't in the song.
I think maybe Aquarius needs to take a shower.
No, they do say love will steer the planets. I just don't know where it was steering it.
Right. Well, anyway, you know, if you're stuck around your house, hey, there's nothing keeping you from at least going out in the backyard, right? With a telescope.
Right. Somewhere up there in that area of the sky, there was also a comet, but you couldn't see it with the naked eye, which I thought was pretty freaking fantastic for a morning stroll.
You know, for quite a while, I had the ISS tracker app on my phone, and it was fun that I'd get a notification. I'd drag Harrison out in the street, and we go.
Still do?
You could see it. Yeah, you could see it going flying over. I haven't spotted it in a while. I'm going to have to go put that app back on my phone, but that was always fun.
I'm not getting notifications either, but we did get one when we were at the Botanical Gardens last fall, back when you could go out and socialize with people, and we're walking along, and all of a sudden I get the alert, and I'd point up at the sky and people go, what are you looking at? I said, there goes the International Space Station. Pretty soon people are going, wow, really? That's it? Well, cool.
That's the reaction I got, except for at first people go, what the hell is he doing? He's down the street, you know,
pointing at the star.
There it is. I found it. And they're like, what is it? Anyway, once they figured it out, it's like, oh, that is pretty cool.
So what does CNN Travel have to tell us about?
So they're trying to spread a little interest about that. Well, they're obviously, you're not traveling, so virtually you can travel somewhere. Observing celestial sights could connect us all during a time when we're forced to be physically apart. That was the idea of Megan Evans, a writer and amateur for astronomer who was scrolling through Twitter and reading users' complaints about being stuck inside their homes. The spread of the coronavirus has forced many countries to issue strict rules about social distancing. As she scrolled, Eve said she had an epiphany. I thought, well, if you're stuck here looking at Twitter, why, you might as well go outside, just go out and look at the stars together, right?
Right.
So March 15th, she started leading a virtual stargazing session on Twitter, aptly given the hashtag Starentine. Starentine. There you go. Okay. Starentine by Jen Rose Smith, a freelance writer who writes for CNN Travel. The idea to me is quite nice. So we're all under the same sky. So why not go over there and observe?
More or less. I mean, you can't really do that with somebody who's in Australia. They're going to see the sky quite a bit different than what
they're
we
on
are.
Their own down there.
Hey, look over there by the Big Dipper. What?
Yeah. So get out there and observe something. You know, even if you just go hang out and just look at it and wonder, right?
Yep. See what you can see. Get yourself an app on your mobile device, and you know, yes. With the VR, you can aim it at the sky, and it says, over there is Aquarius, and over there is Orion.
I did have, what was that, Star?
I've got Star Walk 2.
Maybe that was it. It gives you, one of those gives you these nice drawings.
Yes,
of
it'll draw the constellations up there.
The constellations, yeah.
There's another one I've got on here. I don't use quite as much, but Stellarium. There's a ton of them if you look for star mapping apps. Free, even if you got to pay a couple of bucks, to me, it's well worth it. Just,
all right.
You can even search and say where, you know, look for Saturn or where's the ISS. And it will show you even below the horizon. You can be aiming at your feet and go,
oh yeah,
it's down there in Corvus, which is in the southern.
Well, with the scouts, when we did our new scout camp out, that's when the new scouts come in.
Yeah.
They're, you know, about 11 year old. And we did that. There was an astronomy badge, and what we did was we take them out, and we used to nap, and we were able to say, hey, there's so-and-so. There's Venus, and,
yep.
Oh, look, if you look below, there's the, you know, the sun, and there's that kind of stuff. And it was really great. I love that app, especially the ones that have the augmented reality, so you can kind of focus, point it right at it, and you can see through your camera as well. Mark Kielfel was trying to be smart. He's got way too much snow on his balcony to open his door. So, way to go, Mark.
He said he doesn't have a backyard. That's what's preventing him from going in his backyard and looking.
Use your neighbor's backyard. Wait, don't do that.
Let's move on to our next article. A study finds Americans who spend over 4 hours per day online are more depressed, anxious, and narcissistic.
Hey, and by the way, part of me was like, okay, we're all in our houses. We're all in our online. I know I'm way on for more than 4 hours a day.
But I don't think I'm depressed. It's part of our job. We work for a cloud-based company, so you kind of have to be online more than 4 hours a day.
Yeah, now I don't really feel like I'm depressed or anxious or narcissistic.
I am, but that's me. Enough about you. Let's talk about me.
I've always been that way.
This is from March 9th, so keep in mind this article is a couple weeks old. A new study by Intentions Consulting, a marketing research firm, and futurist Nicholas Badminton. Yes, as in the sport with the racket and the birdie,
yeah.
Has examined the relationship between social media use and mental health. The Future of Life study, which surveyed 2,025 United States residents, found that those who spend more than 4 hours or 240 minutes a day, what was that, like a metric conversion? Why did they have to put 4 hours in minutes in parentheses?
Well,
anyway,
a little over, a little under.
4 hours a day on social media apps and online platforms have a significantly higher rate of depression, anxiety, and self-identified narcissism. This is highly concerning, as the average American reported spending 5 hours, actually 301 minutes, a day online. And there's a nice little chart, visual graphic, if you want to take a look at it. Quote, our study found an association between the amount of time Americans spend online each day and their rates of depression, anxiety, and narcissism. This is the wrong article to put on our live stream as we're asking.
Yeah, don't log off.
Craig. The study found that those who spend more than 4 hours a day online per day, 33% had been diagnosed or treated for depression in the past year. 33% had been diagnosed or treated for anxiety in the past year, and 31% self-identified as narcissists, egotistical, self-focused, and vain.
Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, if you read the same article and swap out the word online with podcasting.
Those who spend more than four hours a day podcasting
are more depressed, anxious, and narcissistic.
What are you saying, Craig?
I mean,
it's part of my job. I'm a developer evangelist. I kind of have to talk to the people online. Yeah.
No, I just thought it was funny, you know, narcissism in there with podcasts. Never mind.
I come from a family of nine. All right. I got to do all I can to break out and identify.
It was how you ate. You had to kind of fend for yourself, right?
Yes. All right. We have an article. It's actually a video about a woman who built a rotary cell phone because, well, in her words, I hate texting. So this is a link to a YouTube video.
Yes. I know it's a video, but I wanted to put this out there because I thought this was it was a cool project.
It was a cool project. And she said, I can more than, it's for phone calls and phone calls only. And it's a rotary phone. Remember the old slimline phones where the hook to stop you dialing would move a little bit past? That's what this one does. I think she's got the mechanism from an old slimline phone.
Hmm.
The device fits in the palm of your hand. It's a little thicker. You know, it's like a chunky phone. But she did a 3D printing on the case. She's got a contacts database in there. So inside is the guts of a pretty intelligent device. I don't really care for the external antenna that flips up. But
however, she did say you get better reception than that. You would any internal.
I would agree with that. I mean, external antenna. She is an engineer, so she does this stuff. She did bag on smartphones quite a bit, though. You never know if there's an application running in the background. It's like, who cares?
Well, I think Android and iPhone are pretty good about managing this stuff, so I don't really care. Well, except for unless you're worried about your privacy, what's it feeding, that kind of thing. But
true.
I get it. But anyway, regardless of that, she does bag on smartphones a good bit, but this is awesome.
It was a cool project. You know, don't get me wrong. It's a cool project. And we like this kind of quasi-retro stuff all the time. So go check out the show notes for episode 593 at chuckchat.com/technorama. We will have that up in the video and the YouTube and all this good stuff. It's good on her for coming up with the design for the case.
If I'm not mistaken, she used an Adafruit.
Was it really?
I think it was.
For the guts of this thing?
Yeah.
I didn't know Adafruit sells that stuff.
If I'm not mistaken, it was something like that. I thought so.
Yeah, it didn't look like a Pi or an Arduino or anything. So, I mean, it was, wow, I got to go shopping. No, I don't have to go shopping at Adafruit.
Here we go. Sorry, Donna.
No, what I am working on is repurposing one of my Pis as my garage door monitor instead of making it Arduino based. So,
well, you know what? I need to help you out with your garage door.
I got Node-RED installed on it. I got it working, and in almost no time, I was able to read the distance sensor. Okay. I just real quick review. I hooked it up and I said, this ought to work because the distance sensor has four inputs. There's VCC, ground, trigger, and echo. And trigger sends out the pulse. Echo reads it in. So one's an output, one's an input. And I wasn't getting it working, and I think it might have just been a breadboard connection thing, so I just started connecting them directly to the Pi, and I was looking for reference videos on how to hook this up. I came across one that was from some guy in India. He was not narrating in English, and I got it working.
Wow. Like, I've done that before.
Just show me where the wires hook up. Show me what parameters to plug into Node-RED, and I'm good. It's like, hey, it's working. I mean, I even learned a couple new things about a UI on Node-RED. So I could look at my phone and he did a gauge that says it's, you know, 20 centimeters away from the distance center, or it's 210 centimeters away. And I went, that's pretty freaking cool. So
it is cool.
The guts are there. Now I have to architect the rest of the solution of how do I want to build this? Where do I want to put the sensor? Do I want to mount this in the wall? Do I want a touchscreen on the Pi? Or do I want to do this remotely via web interface? All that stuff still needs to be ironed out. But I've got the technical bits working where the sensor gets read into the Pi Now I just got to determine what do I want to do with that. Do I want to report it every time the distance changes? And yeah, it's going to be a fun project. I just, like everything else, got to carve out the time to do it.
Hey, can I share what I did with my garage real quick?
Yes.
All right. So I use, I have Wyze cameras and sensors. So I have a garage door sensor. And I also have a Wyze smart plug. So I put the smart plug over my garage. So what happens is the Wyze app, I hit open the garage door. Of course, it will. The garage door is that smart switch. Yep. It turns it on. What I plugged into that was a power relay. It's like a, I forget the actual name of it, a debounce or something. So what happens is you can tell it when power gets to you, you make this connection, or the connection's on, and when the power gets to it, it opens it up. You can tell it to go either way. So what happens is I tell Wyze, open this thing, turn on the power switch. It turns this on, starts the garage door, and in Wyze, I have after 10 seconds, turn off that switch. So it goes, it comes on, garage door's opening, and then you can hear it go click, and it turns off, and it works. And then I get a notification the garage door opened from the Wyze sensor on the door.
Nice.
Yeah. Worked pretty well, and cost me $12.
Easy, easy.
Yeah.
That's probably cheaper than my solution will end up being.
That's okay.
Well, I'm going to learn a whole lot doing this thing. And, of course, I'm going to hook it into the ServiceNow software at some point.
Oh, here we go. How many times was my garage door open in the last week?
How many times have I left it open? How many? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing about the Wyze sensor. I've got it set up where if it stays open for more than 40 minutes, it'll ping me. So.
And then you manually close it?
No. I can, or you could probably set a rule to automatically close it if I wanted to, or I can just tell Google, or I even set up Bixby to do it. So I can do it from my watch.
Oh, Bixby.
Hey, say what you want for things on the phone. Bixby's not bad. But I wanted to be able to tell my watch.
It's an Android phone. We already have Google Assistant.
Not on my watch.
Why not? It's an Android watch.
You don't have Android. You don't have Android on your watch either.
I can talk to my watch and make it do Android stuff. I generally don't talk to my watch that much. I talk to my phone.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, hey, I went walk the dog and my watch gets on the Wi-Fi. I can open the garage door or close it if I want.
Very nice.
So anyway, it works.
It works. There's just some things that I think people are trying a little too hard with technology to, you know, answer a problem that there's no problem.
Like who, Chuck? I don't see anybody that resembles that remark here.
Hey, again, part of my job to imagine the art of the possible.
I can hear your wife's eyes rolling right now.
She's nodding pretty good just off camera. Yeah. Hasn't steered me wrong yet.
Yeah.
Both my wife and my crazy ideas. If it weren't for crazy ideas, Craig, we wouldn't have this podcast. So let's wrap this one up.
All right. Let's do it.
This is the end of the show stuff. So thank you very much for joining us. You can get in touch with us, as always, on the listener line, 707-530-2428. That's our listener line, 530-CHAT, 707-530-CHAT. Or you can email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. Go over to chuckchat.com/technorama, and you will find all that information on the website. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you once again to our Patreon patrons for supporting this show. It's the end of the month. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We got our bill for both hosting providers, and I went, hallelujah. There's money in the bank. There's money coming in, and you guys are awesome. So just want to pass that on one more time. Till next time, give them a binary high five, Craig.
All right. 101. Stay safe, everybody.
Yes, that too. Take care.